Principles of Economics, My Complete Guide to Understanding Economics, is now available in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook from SaifEddin.com, Amazon, and many more booksellers worldwide. And now, I am also teaching a course based on this book on my website, SaifEddin.com. Principles of Economics will run the whole academic year, from September to June, and will have a new lecture every 2 weeks, as well as weekly live online discussion seminars open to learners from all over the world and from all walks of life. Whether you're a student, a professional, or a retiree, you are making economic decisions every day, and this course will arm you with the wisdom of centuries of economists to improve your economic decision-making. You'll also get a free book of Principles of Economics if you sign up for the course. Go to SaifEddin.com and sign up now. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin-only social network that connects you with high-signal Bitcoiners, events, and now merchants as well. If you're like me and can't stop talking about Bitcoin, you know how challenging it can be to talk to the no-coiners and how nice it is to talk to someone who gets you. With the Orange Pill app, you can find the Bitcoiners near you and they can replace the no-coiners in your life. You can organize events and meetups with local Bitcoiners, and wherever you travel, you can meet up with local Bitcoiners all while being as anonymous as you like. So if you want to build your local network of Bitcoiners, find a Bitcoin meetup or merchants accepting Bitcoin, head over to orangepillapp.com to sign up or download the app from the App Store or Google Play Store and send me a DM so we can get connected. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you by CoinKite. CoinKite are my favorite makers of Bitcoin hardware. They produce the legendary OpenDime, the first Bitcoin bearer asset, as well as the reliable Cold Card hardware wallet, the excellent stainless steel seed plates for storing your seed phrases, and the block clock. Now, CoinKite have produced the Sats card, a card the size of a credit card which can store Bitcoin and works great as a gift. CoinKite have just produced a limited edition gorgeous Bitcoin Standard Sats card, which carries the Bitcoin Standard logo, and you can get it from coinkite.shop/Bitcoin Standard. Use the code Bitcoin Standard to get 5% off your purchase. This podcast is also brought to you by the Bitcoin Way, your professional Bitcoin IT team offering you personalized, secure, and comprehensive solutions for every step along your Bitcoin journey. The Bitcoin Way offer live concierge service to guide you with your Bitcoin cold storage, running your node, privacy best practices, inheritance planning, corporate strategy, and multi-sig solutions. They don't touch your coins, they guide you through the process of acquiring your coins and securing them. If you'd like to make your setup safer and more reliable, book a consult with them and see what they have to suggest. If you want to give someone the gift of Bitcoin, get them this professional service that will ensure they start off knowing exactly how to manage their coins and not lose them. Go to thebitcoinway.com and start Bitcoining more confidently. Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Standard Podcast Seminar. In today's seminar, our guest is Steve Barber from Edmonton in Canada, who is the CEO and founder of Upstream Data Inc. And this is a company which has been extremely innovative in providing Bitcoin mining solutions. And I personally have a small investment in this company and I'm an advisor to them. Because I really like what they're doing and I like the work of Steve. And so I wanted to get him on here to chat to us a little bit about his company, what they do, why they do it, and all the interesting implications it has for Bitcoin in particular and for helping us look at energy around the world. So, Steve, thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me, Saif. I'm based out of Calgary, not Edmonton, by the way.
Oh, that's right. We met in Edmonton when I came and visited, but yes, you're right, you're in Calgary.
Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you guys for sure.
Thank you. Thank you for showing up and joining us. So I guess what I wanted to begin with is just give us a brief idea about what it is that Upstream Data does.
Well, we're basically, we're an oil field service company. We specialize in building data centers. So I got my OHM hat on. So that's our brand of our data centers that we build. And these are Bitcoin mining data centers for oil field. So I usually describe you know, to a newbie, like to an oil field, like pumper or someone in the field who are asking, like, what is that we build? To them, I usually just say, you know, we do distributed computing, data centers. For some reason, that's easier for them to understand than if I specifically say that we do Bitcoin mining, because they usually, you know, they'll have a lot more questions once I bring that up. But sometimes I find if I just leave it vague as just data centers, they accept that and then they move on. So depends on who I'm talking with. But yeah, so we do data centers that we deploy to remote sources of waste, in precisely like waste gas, like wasted natural gas. So that would be like vent gas, which is like the worst form of waste gas because it's just released to atmosphere uncombusted, and it has the most regulatory restrictions around it. So it has the most financial incentive to for the producers to actually monetize that gas or deal with it somehow, which is what we do. But also flare gas and stranded gas. So, for example, we're setting up a stranded gas well actually really close to this office. I'm in Lloydminster right now. This is our fabrication facility. You can sort of see a bunch of ASICs on the floor right next to me that we're repairing. But this is where we build, and there's a gas well close to town that we're setting up with some of our hash generators. And it's just a way for, you know, when these oil and gas producers have these stranded assets, they can deploy our equipment, monetize that gas. I sort of describe it as like a portable sales point for their gas. So.
Yeah. So essentially you allow people to use their waste methane to mine Bitcoin. And this is a big deal because waste methane is a huge problem. Just how big of a problem is this?
You hear about wasted methane in a variety of industries. Like, you know, there's that, certainly landfill gas, like they talk about that as a source of wasted methane. They often talk about, you know, like the wasted methane from cattle and from grazing livestock, right? That's not the stuff we go after, of course. You know, they talk about wasted methane, like from the, you know, in the heating up of the Arctic tundra and stuff. Now, none of that is what we go after precisely, although in some cases there could be an actual use case there for Bitcoin mining if you can capture that gas. But we go specifically after the stranded and wasted methane, and not just methane, but methane does make up the bulk of it, natural gas in oil field, which is much easier to manage. You know, it's coming, it's always coming out of a well, and, you know, it's pretty simple to, deploy Bitcoin mine on these sources. At least, you know, it's usually the volumes are adequate to, power even a small engine. And so you can just plumb the gas directly into the engine, generate power, and of course feed computers and my Bitcoin.
And usually your gas is there 24 hours, right? Your miners can run 24 hours, right?
Yeah, like the gas is usually there 24 hours if there's no issues at the facility. But there can be issues from time to time, and different facilities, different applications will have different challenges. Usually it is a steady stream, though it can be volatile. Like there can be periods where it's low volume, high volume, like low pressure, high pressure. That's always a more challenging case to, you know, to fully monetize that gas and also fully deal with the gas for the producer. But that's part of our job, is to design our facilities that can deal with fluctuating gas rates.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, the potential for this is pretty huge because the number of oil fields around the world that are burning methane is enormous. There's a very large amount of energy that is being burned because it can't be transported, because transporting it would be too expensive. Gas needs pipelines, and these are very expensive to lay, or if you wanted to transport it through trucks and ships and so on, it's obviously way too expensive to do it in terms of the units of energy that are in it, because gas is just not that dense compared to oil and coal in terms of the energy that's inside it. And so it's a problem, because it's people talk about the problem of the scarcity of energy around the world, but we have all this energy that we're burning away, but we can't use it because it's too expensive and it can't be utilized anywhere. Up comes the savior that fixes everything, Bitcoin, to fix this problem. And how does Bitcoin fix this?
That is one of the that was the first thing that drew me to Bitcoin, actually, was that, you know, mining was energy intensive, and it was a mechanism to monetize and bring value to basically electricity wherever you can produce it, right? You could theoretically do it in outer space if you had the right infrastructure. You could mine on the moon if you had the right inputs. So that was what initially drew me to it. And I mean, I'm an oil field engineer background, like I'm a mechanical engineer. And this whole vent gas, flare gas problem was something we always, you know, in the office, we were always talking about, you know, why don't we try this technology? For example, load banks. The load banks is interesting because right around the time that, you know, I started this business, my former company that I was working with started installing load banks to get rid of their gas. So as a way to combust their gas. So they just, instead of basically deploying a data center like we're doing, they would deploy a genset, and instead of feeding a data center, they'd feed a bunch of resistors and just generate heat in a load bank. And that was just one way they could get rid of their gas and become compliant with the regulations. So there's a lot of creative ways, like other guys are running, aside from what you commonly hear about, like combustors, flare stacks, and that kind of thing. You know, people are getting pretty creative in how they're, you know, like trying to waste the gas, like, because they're trying to just burn the gas so that it's meeting regulatory emissions volumes and emission standards, as opposed to venting it. And there's even one producer in this area that's boiling water in tanks just to get rid of the heat and get rid of the gas. So it's definitely it's funny how creative people get to deal with this. But like for me, like when I was reading about Bitcoin in 2016 and learning about it, it was like, that was the first thing before I even really learned about how Bitcoin worked and how awesome it was. I was like, oh, I wonder, can, you know, who's applying these computers to the oil field? Like, who's getting rid of or monetizing this associated gas that goes to waste? And I really couldn't find anyone at the time, which is why I started this company.
Okay, so you were already into gas before you'd even heard about, you knew about the gas flaring problem before you'd even heard about Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was interesting to you because of that.
Yeah, it was something me and my own peers, like within my facilities group. I used to work at Husky Energy. They actually just got bought out. They're a big Canadian oil and gas producer. But me and my peers and like the engineers I worked with and the operators. It's just something that, especially, it is becoming more and more of a hot topic, like dealing with this gas. While it's been sort of on the radar for many decades, like it's always been a problem in oil fields, is how to utilize all of the gas that's produced and not waste it, not flare it. But it was becoming more of a problem in recent years with more strict emissions regulations coming into place. So like carbon taxes, right? And stuff like that. Stuff that's going to financially impact these oil and gas producers negatively. So it was just becoming a thing where, you know, more and more of us were trying to, we see what's coming on the regulatory side of things, and also where things are going with carbon taxes and sort of the whole social discussion about that. So it's something oil and gas producers have been actively, you know, trying to find ways to to do that. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting technologies coming out where people are trying to mitigate these things. Like we have one client who's bought some of our data centers that's paired them with, I think they call it, off the top of my head, I don't know what they call the technology, but it's basically they create methanol from the methane. So they put it through some kind of process on site and create a liquid and a methanol liquid and something more transportable that does, you know, it's not a compressed gas and something they can sell. So people are, and there's other things I've heard of people doing. There's another company that we're quoting right now who's using like turbo expanders as a way to deal with the high pressure gas and get some energy out of it. But also they have some other end use for the gas. And then they're looking at possibly mining Bitcoin off the energy they produce. But to me, as someone like my old job was evaluating these projects, and I was part of the design of these projects. And to me, like knowing what's out there in terms of alternative check technologies to, like, let's say Bitcoin mining, I don't think anything really compares to Bitcoin mining as an actual scalable solution. I mean, the best solution aside from a Bitcoin mine for this gas is a pipeline and compression. But unfortunately, the problem with that is, you know, in a lot of cases, it does make sense. But in many cases, especially with low gas prices, you know, you sink a lot of money into a pipeline and you don't recover that pipeline. It's not an asset you get to recover. It just sits in the ground forever. You have to abandon it properly, of course, but then you're not getting your money out of that investment. So Bitcoin mining is actually what I believe is the only scalable, massively scalable. So something that, you know, it's not nearly, the market for Bitcoin is not nearly mature enough yet to deploy this technology to, let's say, every waste energy source in oil field. But that's only because there's too many. And the total revenue earned in mining right now isn't quite high enough to monetize all that energy. But as the network continues to, you know, grow at an exponential rate, which it has continued to do, I'm pretty confident. And I'm certainly, you know, I obviously bet on this business and a bet on the technology that Bitcoin mining will effectively end. It won't completely end, but it'll effectively end the whole waste gas problem.
The syllabus for my new online economics course, Principles of Economics, is now available on saifeddin.com. The course will take place over 18 lectures, each based on one chapter from my new book, Principles of Economics, which will be available for free as an ebook for everyone registering for the course. Lectures will be released once every 2 weeks on Mondays, starting on the 25th of September, 2023, and will be available in video and audio format. Live discussion seminars will be held once a week on Thursdays at alternating time slots, 12 hours apart, to ensure learners can attend from all over the world. I'm happy to announce that I have set up my new publishing house and online bookstore, The Safe House, which will be publishing and delivering the best Bitcoin and Austrian economics books worldwide in hardcover, audiobook, and ebook formats. Go to thesafehouse.com to buy my latest book, Principles of Economics, as well as the Fiat Standard and the Bitcoin Standard. And now I'm also publishing Fiat Food, Matthew Lisiak's amazing investigation into how inflation ruined our diet and health. And I'm also publishing Lynn Alden's Broken Money, her masterful exploration of the failures of the global financial system and how Bitcoin fixes it. This is a Bitcoiner's bookshop, so the books are printed in beautiful cloth hardcover made to last with an ice-colored dust jacket on top. Go to thesafehouse.com and get yours now.
Yeah, I think that's it's truly amazing to think about it, you know, just having millions of little miners all over the world sucking up all the methane wherever it comes out and using it to secure Bitcoin. And if you think about it, you know, as a technological engineering solution, this is such a superior solution to having central banks. I mean, it's just so much cleaner and nicer and more peaceful. And it's just, it makes so much sense. It's like really like upgrading from a crappy old Windows to the most brilliant, simple little MacBook or you know, so this kind of transformation of a technology that is just clearly very messy and clearly very ugly and involves way too much reliance on human agency and human control, like telephone operators, and then moving to the beauty of a telephone that doesn't need an operator, where you and I can just call each other without having to talk to somebody in the middle. It's so much simpler. And I think in a sense, what your company shows is that, you know, we can replace all the world's central banks. We can replace the political settlement layer that exists at the bottom of the global fiat system with essentially machines that can do the same thing. And it's not just any bunch of machines. You know, when people think about Bitcoin mining, they think, oh, there's one giant Chinese data center where the Chinese Communist Party is in charge of all the miners. And, you know, they're giving us these Bitcoins right now to lure us into their system. And then they're going to change the rules on us,
yeah.
Which I think is not very accurate. Mining is much more distributed, and I think you've got some strong ideas on that. What do you think mining is going to look like in this regard, and how distributed it is? And relatedly, you know, to any of the listeners or attendees who's considering mining, give us some of your top reasons why they probably shouldn't be mining.
Why they shouldn't be mining? I do personally believe the distribution of mining is going to continue to increase. I think it has, just the evidence shows that it has increased over the 12 years that Bitcoin's been around. You know, when it comes to, like, people talk about, let's say, China dominating the mining scene, which they still do. Like, there's still said to be well over 50% of the hash powers in China. Of course, there's some good reasons for that. One of the biggest reasons, though, is that most of Chinese mining is on hydroelectric. And part of the reason that is the case is because China had a massive, what I would just assume to be, and you know, I'll say that was a massive misallocation of capital in building out all of these hydro facilities. I believe they're anticipating, you know, demand, local demand off the grid. But many of these hydro plants, you know, were running at, you know, not even close to their capacity. They're curtailing a ton of water. A lot of water is just going down the, you know, down the spillways. They're not generating electricity. There's no load on the system. And, you know, they made the mistake of sort of building out these facilities. And then that's just a great opportunity for Bitcoin miners, because, of course, when you overbuild this capacity and you don't have the demand for it, that means you have cheap energy. And, of course, that's one of the reasons why, like, China has really dominated mining in the first decade of Bitcoin mining. But I don't think that's going to hold up. Like, I think that's slowly going to shift away for a few reasons. Like, I mean, one, it's already getting more competitive in China for mining. It's becoming more established and sort of, I think we'll start seeing these entities that own these facilities, like the utilities themselves, whether that's the local government or the CCP or whoever owns it over there, they'll start doing their own mining as opposed to having these third parties come in. But that capacity is very easy to tie into. It's already grid-based. It's very easy to throw up a Bitcoin mine on those sources of energy. So through just natural competitive means, I expect, you know, that the prices of power in China will go up as more and more Bitcoin miners are competing for that. And I think that's actually why we've been seeing slowly but surely is their prices have been going up. But as for where it's going, you know, I really think, you know, obviously my business, I'm biased, but I do believe the oil and gas industry will certainly in the next call it the next decade of Bitcoin, and the next, like through the 2020s and beyond, will dominate the mining scene. You'll see the most growth in this industry as opposed to every other energy, any other space, like whether it's like renewable energy or more, you know, hydro. I think it's going to really start moving into oil and gas in a big way. And I mean, I see that sort of already, like our, now with Bitcoin price sort of going up here recently, now that we're an established business, you know, our name, we have 3 to 4 years of our name being out there and word of mouth and then all that, like our sales is going up like probably more than proportionally than the price. So things are looking really good in that direction. But what I just know of that's out there in waste energy in the oil field and what these guys have to do to deal with that, the amount of money they have to pay people to get rid of it. If they can instead just invest in like a pretty cost-effective solution in a portable data center, I think they're going to do that. So I think, you know, one of the biggest holdbacks still in this space is, and actually in, you know, in Bitcoin adoption in general, is the whole, I just call it like the, its credibility isn't quite there for everybody. Like for us, we've learned enough about it. We understand how the system works. It's a very credible asset. For people that are really new to it though, it takes time. Like it takes them time. They need to first be introduced to it. They need to then, you know, hear more about it, maybe word of mouth, do some research. It takes a bit of time. And that's sort of what is holding back, I think, a lot of big oil and gas producers right now. They're not yet exposed enough to it. But I do see that's where it's going. I think there's going to be a big shift in hash power going into oil field, and oil field generally is distributed. There's thousands of oil and gas producers across even North America. There's hundreds of thousands of oil and gas wells. I mean, in Alberta alone, this is just the province of Alberta and Canada, there's, I think, 90,000 suspended wells. So those are wells that are sitting, that have no, that aren't producing, that are just sitting there. And I mean, this obviously poses other problems, like liability issues with who's going to clean up those wells. So there's just enormous. I mean, if you just look at the total energy produced globally, like oil and gas still dominates. And coal still dominates the total energy output. And where there's all that energy, there's a lot of waste. And that's where Bitcoin mining is going to play a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I entirely agree on this. I think obviously hydro does have, is quite suited for Bitcoin mining because hydro is produced in large quantities, many places where it's not needed. So it can work. But I think, you know, fossil fuels, you just can't beat them. There's a reason they've been 90% of all of our energy consumption for all of the 20th century. And even today, you know, when we look at it and the charts shows that it's 90% and all these other energy sources, it's about 85%. But, you know, most of these other energy renewable sources, their little percentages don't really count because their percentages are just essentially recycled fossil fuels. You know, you use hydrocarbons in order to make windmills, and then those windmills over 20 years, they make up a fraction of the energy that went into producing them and transporting them and putting them up. So it's really just hydrocarbon laundering. And and these energy sources don't really have much potential for growing because they don't have a steady demand, and they don't, and they can't meet peak hour demand. And I think this also makes them massively unsuited for Bitcoin mining. There are a lot of Bitcoiners have tried to play up the angle that, you know, Bitcoin will encourage renewable energy technology and innovations, and, you know, supposedly we're going to be mining Bitcoin on windmills and solar panels. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been like a big you know, a lot of people, you'll hear them say you know, Bitcoin mining is great for the adoption of renewables. usually they're talking about wind and solar, but you know, they're using that word. I don't really see it that way. For a few reasons. I mean, obviously the point you just brought up, like, I haven't heard that before, hydrocarbon laundering, but that's definitely a big part of it. Generally these renewable proponents often, you know, and I've looked at a lot of the reports on, you know, like the reports that come out about like solar adoption, solar pricing getting better and better. I look at how they sort of derive a lot of their numbers, and they usually don't account for the emissions and this the products that come from fossil fuels that they integrate into their technologies. I mean, you mentioned like using fossil fuels to build and distribute wind turbines, which is sort of obvious to people, but it's not really integrated in there, such as like the steel, which uses coking coal, you know, coal and stuff like that. It's not really considered. But I think generally what people fail to realize is in a lot of these renewables applications, like these energy applications, unless they're using battery backup, which they rarely are because it's so ridiculously expensive, they're often call it subsidizing, or when that energy source can't meet demand, they have a baseline on, let's say, natural gas or coal that makes up for that. So these, like, you build these big wind farms in Texas and in California or wherever, they still need a fossil fuel reliable backup to them, or else they start having issues like rolling brownouts and blackouts. And we've seen that in places like California. So even when you build this infrastructure, because of the nature of the energy production, it's intermittent, it's unreliable. The demand isn't, you know, it's variable as well. It's not well suited without some kind of stored energy means, and that's usually going to be fossil fuels. And then I think one of the biggest points that people sort of just gloss over when they say that, you know, Bitcoin mining is great for renewables. The whole point of renewables, like the reason the government and other institutions are investing all this money and basically subsidizing this industry, let's say wind, the whole point of that is to displace fossil fuels, is to have less fossil fuels in the system. But when these people financing these projects, you know, if they start to see that, okay, these wind projects are now just sending all this excess energy to Bitcoin mines, they might sort of question on, you know, why are we subsidizing these industries? We're just subsidizing Bitcoin miners. So if it's not meeting its actual targeted goal, which is to reduce fossil fuel consumption on the grid, they might see issues with those who are financing these projects. But I guess that remains to be seen, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, specifically in the case of Bitcoin mining, it's hopeless because it's intermittent. And if it's intermittent, that means your ASICs are wasting away part of their life. So if you have ASICs that are connected to an energy source that is that operates for only, say, 12 hours a day or 8 hours a day on average over the year, that ASIC is losing half of its life or two-thirds of its life without mining, and it's depreciating quickly without being used for mining, and so that's just not going to be very profitable. And that's why, you know, I think it's I can't see it ever becoming effective to mine in these projects unless, of course, when there's the waste of governments, when governments have already built this plant and it's already there, and you know, there are people who now own it, but they haven't had to pay the full cost of it. You know, if you're in that position, then if you haven't had to pay up the upfront capital and you happen to have the capital available to you because it was subsidized, then yeah, you could use it until you run it down, and it might be profitable. But it's not a decision that it would be taken on the market. And I think that's not because markets fail, as renewable energy enthusiasts like to say. This is because the markets work, because your energy source, if it was workable, it wouldn't need people to be subsidizing it. People would be jumping all over it to use it. But that can't really be the case here. And of course, you know, I think that the deeper problem is, and that was the reason that I was saying, you know, people shouldn't be mining most likely, is that Bitcoin mining is just so competitive because of the difficulty adjustment that, you know, if you have a lot of energy, but it's not cheap energy, that doesn't matter. You're going to lose to the miners who have cheap energy. Bitcoin mining is a relentless free market of competition. And the only people who can get to stay in the game are people who have very cheap electricity. Because if you don't have cheap electricity, you're not going to make it in this. You're just going to be wasting money and you're going to get out of it. So we're constantly going to the cheapest sources of electricity all over the world. And that's, on the one hand, in my mind, why we won't get solar and wind mining. On the other hand, it's also why I think Bitcoin mining is very likely, or I would say certain, to remain decentralized, almost certain, because you'll always find a place where there's cheaper electricity and you can get on the grid and mine. There's no way to stop people from all over the world from finding cheap electricity, you know, whether it's flared methane or isolated hydroelectric plants or whatever it is. There'll always be places where energy is cheap, and then you can just take that and get on the Bitcoin network and mine and, you know, increase the decentralization of the network. And so that's an incredible idea. Once you start thinking about the implication of what you're doing, that people can just, if you have an oil well, you can, you know, not only are you able to make energy and sell it, but also you can just make money. You can basically mine money for it. And I think this also reminds me of the idea that people think that they want to get off the grid and they want to utilize these renewable energies to get off the grid. But I think if you really wanted to get off the grid, the only thing that gets you off the grid is using fossil fuel energy, because it's the only thing that can give you enough power to be independent of a grid.
Yeah, good old fashioned diesel really gets you off the grid. You just need a storage tank and an engine or genset, you're good. Exactly. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I think people are gonna, like, especially with all these stranded gas wells, like there's whole fields of these mature, we call them stripper wells, wells that don't have a lot of productive output left, but they do have enough to run a small engine in a Bitcoin mine. And you can get the last bit of juice out of those wells and help pay the cleanup costs for those wells. There's landowners all over, not just like where we are, Alberta, Saskatchewan, but we have clients down in Texas, all over the US now. And there's landowners in all of these areas that have inactive wells on their land that, you know, it doesn't really take a lot of, you know, it's not that specialized of a skill to go out and build a Bitcoin mine. You need a natural gas genset. You can plumb it into these wells and start mining Bitcoin. I mean, I'm already aware of people doing that, sort of low key, like just landowners doing it on these old wells that are on the property. I believe that's probably going to, you know, happen to a much greater extent over the next decade and beyond as people start to realize how, you know, more and more people get into Bitcoin and see how it is sort of the new monetary standard. So I think, you know, certainly fossil fuels bring a lot of individual sovereignty to people. And I think it's going to bring a lot of decentralization to mining for sure.
Yeah. And also, you know, that's really why you probably shouldn't mine unless you happen to have some kind of free source of energy, unless you happen to have energy as a problem in your life, where you have a place where you have a lot of energy and you're trying to figure out what to do with it. If you don't have that, then you're most likely not going to be able to compete with the people who have that, because, you know, you're up against people who don't even need to turn a profit on it, because the energy is an even bigger cost. So it's hopeless yeah. thinking about mining off the grid. There's no way that you're going to be turning a profit from a grid, because anybody connected to the grid is, you know, the opportunity cost for that power is civilian and industrial uses. So you have to go off the grid, really.
Yeah, I sort of distinguish the difference between like speculative mining, which is mining people that are mining purely to make a profit. So they have like X amount of capital on day one and they decide to invest in a Bitcoin mine instead of just buying Bitcoin. I call that speculative mining because it's because their only goal is to increase, you know, the value of their investment. Contrast that to like the majority of my clients who aren't speculatively mining. In fact, they don't, in many cases, they don't even care about the Bitcoin revenue. They just want somebody, whether it be us or some other third party, to come in and get rid of their gas, and they're willing to pay us to do that. So that I call, you know, I'll just make it up now. I call it utility mining. They're mining for, they have some use. The mining itself brings some utility to them aside from its own, you know, monetary value. So I don't think speculative miners have a bright future. And a lot of these guys, especially, you know, you look at the biggest mining names in the space, I won't name them, but there's plenty of these big companies that are purely spec mining. They're just sourcing massive PPAs, power deals, working directly with the grid. I don't think the grid has a very bright future. At least the grid on the industrial scale has a very bright future for mining. I think it might have a decent future for home mining because, you know, people that mine, you know, either doing it on spec or you're doing it because you're serving some use case. And some use case, like there's, I know a lot of people that even today where mining is very difficult today, like on a revenue basis, like the revenue per kilowatt hour, it's, you know, it's close to its all-time lows. They still continue to mine at home. Not because they think it's a better investment than buying Bitcoin, but they just value, they value the getting the fresh, call it like, you know, freshly mined Bitcoin straight from the pool. They prefer to do that than pay, they'd rather pay a premium doing it that way through their electricity bill than they would buying it over the counter. And maybe they're trying to avoid KYC. Maybe they just like mining. But whatever the case is, you know, people do find value in doing that. And will, you know, I think people that are purely spec mining, you're not going to compete with people that do that and people that, and my customers that do it to solve a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the very, very common mistake that everybody makes when they get into Bitcoin. The initial idea is, oh, well, there's mining. Well, let me get into mining. And everybody has to burn their hand by touching the stove in order to learn the lesson. Well, not everybody. Everybody. People just, I have to say, it's something that I didn't really get into. Well, I guess I shouldn't really say that because of your company. But it took me a while.
To it's a, you know, even my company, you know, we're, I call it professional miners, like if you want to put it that way. But the bulk of my revenue isn't through mining Bitcoin. It's through the supply and sales of products to other people mining Bitcoin. The reason for that is because I don't have, we're a service, like my business is a service business. We have this facility, but I don't have gas wells, not yet anyway. I don't have gas wells that are stranded and I'm paying fees to landowners every year to maintain the rental of the lease and, you know, county fees and permitting fees and other fees that go along with that, like to maintain the mineral rights, all those costs that other producers have, like we don't have that. So that's why we're not, you know, we're not the best suited to be the miner either. The producer is. And that's why when they don't want to buy anything because they don't, you know, they're not really ready to yet. They might consider Bitcoin too speculative still, or too, they're uneasy about it on the accounting level or on the legal level. We're still here to help them because they can pay us or work with us in some manner. Usually we require that they put some skin in the game in some manner, like pay for the installation or something like that. And then we'll get rid of the problem for them. And then we'll mine the Bitcoin instead. So it's, yeah, I think there's the depth in oil and gas alone, like the depth of the energy that's wasted, like the metric I usually reference is The World Bank has a metric that they put out every year. I don't know where they get this information, but they're apparently a reputable source. But they get, it's about 140 billion cubic meters of gas is wasted every year. That's a lot of gas. And like Bitcoin hasn't even scratched the surface of that volume. And that volume increases every year. So fossil fuel consumption keeps increasing every year, right? So it's, I see a revolution in mining will be going oil field. And I don't know about coal, but certainly oil and gas. Natural gas is relatively clean burning in itself, and its demand is only going to keep increasing. So the natural gas waste will do so accordingly.
Yeah, I think one interesting angle to think about is with what's happening in the world around the lockdowns and corona hysteria and all of that stuff. And of course, with all of the hysteria around carbon dioxide killing us all, all these mass murdering particulates that are out there to destroy the planet. The oil and gas and coal industries are taking a beating in regulations, and for many people think of this as a good thing. You know, we're going to bankrupt the oil industry, and that will force the solar and wind industries to get their shit together and become efficient and, you know, defy thermodynamics, and then we will get to live our life without ever having to burn oil again. This is how many people think in general. This is the viewpoint behind these things. But of course, I think the reality is if we do destroy fossil fuels, if we do damage the industries that are dependent on hydrocarbon, you know, the alternative is not going to be some futuristic utopian energy that, you know, these magic cells that just get it from the sun and power all of our life. The alternative is we go back to pre-industrial society. We have to burn wood at home in order to stay warm and in order to survive. And we have whole families choking because of smoke at night. That's really the real proven alternative energy that you're going to have. And I think it's devastating because, you know, what you saw with the lockdowns, to the oil industry, it's hugely destructive. I mean, it obviously has been destructive to all industries when you just shut everything down. But in particular with oil, it's a massively capital intensive industry. It's highly advanced. It requires a lot of investment. And these shocks like the lockdowns come and, deliver a huge hit to the entire ecosystem and to the entire supply chain all along the way. And even if those lockdowns were to subside, you know, a lot of companies went out of business, a lot of machines stopped working, a lot of capital depreciated and lost its usefulness. So more and more of this stuff continues to happen around the world, and you can... You know, for me, this is not a good thing. It's not something to be happy about because it means more and more people likely going back into pre-industrialization and going back into suffering from all the problems that we thought industrialization was going to eliminate. Industrialization and abundant energy and electricity. And so maybe, you know, the positive note here is that maybe it is going to be Bitcoin that effectively subsidizes fossil fuel energy and allows it to continue. Because if we can manage to do this, I mean, obviously it's a very small scale today compared to the overall oil industry. But if the oil industry can manage to have this kind of safety net of we can always just turn on the... our miners and start mining Bitcoin, and that'll cover some of our costs and allow us to, you know, maintain the company in the black during the next lockdown and the next restrictions that are going to be coming. Maybe this is another underrated thing that Bitcoin fixes. Maybe contrary to what a lot of people want to hear about Bitcoin helping solar and wind, maybe Bitcoin is going to actually help us have better, cheaper, more reliable fossil fuels going into the future, which really is, I mean, you, if you like the idea of civilization, if you like the idea of children, majority of children surviving the age of five, if you like all of these nice things, you should like fossil fuels, because they are what make this possible.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with all that. I mean, I'm not personally worried about, you know, they can do what they want to try to, you know, they can keep adding more taxes to the fossil fuel industry, adding more regulation, doing crazy, you know, centralized moves, like locking down society and shocking this industry by, you know, out of nowhere, the oil prices go to zero. And everyone that was investing capital just misallocated all that money and wasted it, like building infrastructure that has no demand. They can, all of this stuff, I don't think hurts oil and gas in the long term, because it's inherently too useful and it's used in too much of our infrastructure. I mean, there's not a building like erected that isn't erected with diesel and all the horsepower behind it. And not just that, but all the materials have some kind of petrochemical byproduct in it. So, I mean, they can keep, you know, the detractors of fossil fuels and the people sort of spewing the false rhetoric that renewables is going to just take over. They can keep doing that. It's just going to, well, it's really just going to increase prices, of course, of fossil fuels. And that'll justify drilling in places that are even, you know, that are generally even harder to access as prices go up. But I don't really think there's any way to force the transition off fossil fuels. I don't think there's been a time in history in which the government forced the transition off one energy to another. I think it generally happens when through innovation, right? Like when the Industrial Revolution came, that took us off, you know, burning wood or what we were doing beforehand. And it opened up so much more to society. So I don't really see that happening. And the more rules they put on, and the more capital that's misallocated, I think it in general just helps Bitcoin as a product, as a solution, because it's a solution that helps people, like that example of like building, you know, wasting money building hydro dams, but then you're lucky that Bitcoin miners come in and start paying you for that energy that no one else will. You end up just subsidizing Bitcoin miners. And I think when they do this, when they manipulate the economy, it just gives Bitcoin a bigger use case, and it's just going to spur more investment into Bitcoin in the whole ecosystem. And mining is obviously a critical part of that.
So, yeah, absolutely. One way of looking at it is that it spurs more investment into Bitcoin. But as you start spending more time thinking about the world through the lens of Bitcoin, another, you know, do you look at it the other side of the coin, or, you know, if you look at it through the other side of the glass, I guess, you see that another way of looking at it is that every time they do something like this, it's almost like they're just putting the entire fiat economy on discount. Like, let's devalue our entire economy and all of our money and all of our capital by 5% by wasting so much of our country's capital on trying to make windmills and solar work and making electricity so much more expensive. Like they're doing in Canada now with all of these taxes that they're adding. On the one hand, yes, it adds demand for Bitcoin, but on the other hand, it makes the fiat economy smaller compared to Bitcoin, because it just continues to destroy it and destroy its size. It's sad and pathetic, but, you know, at least now we have a hope in Bitcoin, whereas a few years ago we had nothing but bitching and moaning.
Yeah, it's funny how it works. Like even these carbon, you know, in Canada we have these carbon taxes, and so far the upstream oil and gas industry has been somewhat exempt, although they now have taxes in certain jurisdictions, and it's going to ramp up over the next few years. But I don't know if this is ironic or not, but, you know, with carbon penalties, now they have this carbon credit system. And our clients are currently, we're working with a third party carbon credit company, that potentially we might get carbon credits for our own business, because, and our customers mainly, because we're using a technology that reduces emissions, right? So there's credits that can be applied to that. And so they create these artificial systems, like these carbon penalties, carbon credits, that's just full of corruption and capital being siphoned off by these different divisions and stuff. But aside from all that, it just ends up like it could end up just subsidizing more Bitcoin mining, right? So, you know, this whole fiat system, which, you know, it's almost like they can do nothing to hurt Bitcoin. Everything just helps it. So I think it'll be interesting to see anyway, in the next few years, how this sort of plays out. And if, you know, if these agencies that are responsible for basically allocating carbon credits and penalties and sort of regulating that, I'm interested personally in seeing how they take Bitcoin mining, once it catches on more and it's becoming more widely deployed, like how they're going to treat that, if they discriminate against it, or if they just, you know, treat it like everything else and then apply credits to it, in these cases where we're reducing emissions. So that'll be fun to see what happens.
It's amazing. Everything just finds a way of being good for Bitcoin.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like an arbitrage tool is one way to look at it. And, you know, when they create these, when the market is inefficient because of these fiat policies and this, certainly, you know, central banking policies, and then when they come in with these lockdowns and just, you know, throw things into disarray, it creates opportunities. And I think Bitcoin is a good mechanism, for capturing that. Bitcoin mining, of course, is a great arbitrage mechanism, because it gives energy the same value no matter where it is on the planet, right? A kilowatt hour here is worth the same anywhere on the planet. And so there's a natural arbitrage going on in the mining space. And anytime they, you know, if they subsidize energy, maybe they subsidize residential energy, and say, if you have, you live in this area because it's highly wind powered, we're going to subsidize, like the taxpayer is going to offset that energy. That could happen in the future. And then you'll just see people plug Bitcoin mines into their home outlets when they make that energy cheap, artificially cheap. And, so yeah, I think mining acts as arbitrage, and the Bitcoin economy as a whole sort of acts as an arbitrage mechanism for the, you know, the imbalances created by this fiat world.
Absolutely. It's beautiful to watch. Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining. Tell us more about your company and where people can find you online.
Yeah, sure. Well, Upstream Data is the company name, upstreamdata.ca. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we mostly focus on oil producers, but basically any Bitcoin miners can look to us to, you know, at least check out what we do. We can, we supply data centers, portable data centers for oil field in North America. And then me personally, you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at SG Barber on Twitter.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.